If you'd care to take your seats and gather at the table, ladies and gentlemen. Observers are welcome at this meeting.
Good. Okay. And I can't read a thing in there, so this is just me, my inability to read. I'm missing some of my Latin Americans. This does not please me. Get down there where you're supposed to be picking. That's all right. I'll have none of you stirrers not at the table. Come on. I've had my eye on Carlton for hours. Not a problem. I knew where he was. Okay. Right. Now, yes, I can actually almost read. It's just blurry around the edges, which is definitely me. Thank you very much. Okay. I gather, Carly, you're able to spend 40, 50. Give me a time. How much time have you got? Could you give us an hour, if possible? What? You tell me. Okay. We have 45 minutes with Carla. As we noted yesterday, her apologies. Obviously, she's got something to say to us when the word got out that we were not exactly delighted with Rule 6. And we had a discussion this morning, and certainly I feel a great deal more comforted having spoken to her in the corridors, as you do, that there is a great deal that could be done in the implementation part of this process. To that end, I thought it was well worthwhile us sharing that information that she has on implementation and looking at it as to what that means to us and our ALS and RALO views. It's probably a good idea if we start with our particular position, which I'm more than happy to read into the record of this text, so you know where we're coming from to begin with. The proposed motion from the ALAC perspective is: any ICANN process in which morality and public order, however defined, is an evaluation criteria debases the ICANN process. For any international organisation, the notion of public order is out of order, since the concept is so bound to the idea of the nation state. An international organisation cannot be principled on the one particular notion of morality. We also question whether ICANN is yet an international organisation. Human rights instruments should not be linked to notions of morality. Human rights are intrinsic, whereas no intrinsic rights to domain name purity exist. Local community standards may not be determined or adjudicated by an international tribunal. Well-established local systems are already in place to adjudicate questions of morality and public order. Domain names ought to be treated as symbols devoid of meaning do not intrinsically possess trademark status. Boy, I nearly had a fit at that moment. Hey, got me scared too, I tell you. Although there was a certain constituency in ICANN that would have been very happy to see it written that way. This ICANN process favours dispute resolution companies at the expense of users. Refer to Articles 18, 27, 19, I really can't see that clearly, 19, 27, 29 of the UN Universal Declaration of Human Rights. ICANN risks straying into areas that are clearly treaty obligations.
Is there any more? Because I can't. That's it. Thank you.
Okay, so now I can draw breath. That's our position on our knee-jerk reaction to what we have read. And obviously, if anything can be said in terms of how our fears, which I'm sure are very clearly articulated, might be met in the implementation phase, we'd very much like to hear from you on that matter. Thank you, Carla.
Thank you, everybody, for having me here. I would like to go back to the first bullet, if possible, and start the clarification here. So any ICANN process in which morality and public order, however defined, is an evaluation criterion, the basis, the ICANN processes. Now, when I read evaluation criterion, what I hear is that when an applicant applies to a TOD, we would be looking at the string or the TOD string that's been applied for, and at the same time look at some kind of criterion and make a judgment in the evaluation process whether or not this is against morality and public order. Did I understand that correctly? That's what you meant by that? Yes. So when you look at the evaluation process, so let's say the application process happened, right? All of the applications were lodged, and we did all the administrative checks. Everything is well. The evaluation period starts. The evaluation period, look at it as being two different parts. One part of it is to look at the applicant. Can this applicant, has this applicant demonstrated that he is capable of managing a TOD from an operational, business, and technical standpoint to our satisfaction? So the experience of the registrants, the registrars, the end users, and everything, you know, is somehow satisfied. So has this applicant provided us with enough information to show and demonstrate that they have an understanding what it takes and they know how to implement that? So this is the part on where the applicant is evaluated, and we usually call that the business and technical criteria, basically the operational and technical criteria. And there's going to be a set of questions and a set of, you know, just minimum requirements that we look at and say, yes, this applicant indeed has met this criteria, has met the requirements. Yes. Oh, okay. So this is the first part of the evaluation. The second part of the evaluation is to look at the string itself, TOD string or TOD extension or top-level domain, however you want to call it, so the TOD string itself. When we look at the TOD string, we look from two points of view. The first one is, has the string followed all of the rules, all of the criteria that has to do with the DNS stability? And those are quite straightforward in many instances. So for instance, for ASCII, there is a minimum and a maximum number of characters that is allowed. So after the dot, you start counting the characters. Beyond 63, we are not going to allow an application to go through. There are some technical reasons for why things are, you know, why those rules exist. And I'm not probably the best person to speak in details for these technical reasons, but all of those rules, they were taken from RFCs and worked from the technical community. And so we collected those specific rules, and this is how we're formulating the criteria. And you can find specifics about this criteria in a paper that is called the DNS Stability Paper that was published in the beginning of the year. You can find that paper on the new GTOD page, web page. It's still available. Note that the criteria or the information you find there is for ASCII. We're still expanding that for IDMs. So, for instance, we have a challenge ahead that looks at, for instance, the number of characters and think, how are we going to apply some of these rules to other other scripts or other characters like Chinese, or you know how this is going to take to play? So this is so again, this DNS stability paper, you look at it as being the ASCII rules, but this is going to be expanded to incorporate IDNs as well. So the rules are very strict. Like for instance, after the dot, you cannot have all numbers. And there's a technical reason for that, you know, why you cannot have, because of the way the IP operates. So again, So we went through the evaluation process. We looked at the applicant from a business operational technical standpoint. Now we're looking at the TOD string. We just evaluated the DNS stability criteria if the string followed the rules. Some of this evaluation is done in an automated manner. Some of this evaluation is done by looking at it. The second part of the string TOD criteria is to take a look at the string of whether or not it is an identical or similar string to a reserve name. So we're going to have a reserve name list. This list is not ready yet. This is still being, we're still working on this reserve names list. We look at this TOD string to verify whether or not this is identical or similar to an existing TOD, and this is, you know, because of the users. If a string applied for is identical to a reserve name or an existing TOD, this string is not going to go through even in the application process because we're automatically going to reject when this TOD string is added. But then there's the third element of the string, which is looking into it and seeing whether it is identical or similar to another application. And if it is identical or similar to another application, how we are going to define that, how we are going to look at similarities, so what are the parameters that are going to be used to say that this is similar to that. And one of the things that we are doing is we're creating an, or looking, or working with a company that is creating an algorithm that will help us to quickly identify the identical and similar TODs. Now, the algorithm, and we are not naive to think that we can create a system that would actually resolve anything or determine anything. The algorithm is going to be used as a tool. And everything that we are building, the web-based application, the algorithm, and the processes, they are being designed taking into account the perspective of potentially having scalability, taking scalability into account. So if we have a lot of the applications, having tools and systems in place that deal with volume are very important, so the applicant experience is not compromised. So the algorithm...
Yes. I'm going
too fast. No, you're not going too fast. You're going absolutely in the wrong direction according to everybody pinging me.
Okay,
they're basically saying this is what we heard yesterday. We understand that it's not the technical part.
So let me make
cut
my point.
To the map there.
Okay.
Thank you.
So when we talk, so this is actually part of the evaluation process. So when we talk about evaluation criteria being designed by ICANN and evaluation process, this is the extent of the evaluation. Business, operational, technical string. We are not using criteria on morality and public order to make a judgment on the string. And this is the reason why I wanted clarification on the first bullet, because that struck me as being inaccurate in the statement itself. Now, morality and public order, or the concept of it, the concern about the issues, are in the policy. So if they are not being used, if this is not being used in the actual evaluation criteria, what is it? So there is an objection process. In the objection process, recommendation 6 will be a mechanism that third parties that feel that a certain applicant or certain string has violated morality and public order. And we do understand I will comment a little bit later on how has been our work on trying to find a common ground around that. We'll have a mechanism to go and say, you know what, we oppose to that, because this in our culture and in our nation, or, you know, for our users, is, you know, against our principles of morality and public order. Now, the challenge for us is that when we looked at this recommendation, they gave us some examples, principles of laws. We looked at the principles of international laws. And when I say we, it's not Carla and half a dozen of ICANN staff. We is ICANN staff, and we consult with the board, and we consult with the community, and we consult with international attorneys from various legal systems as diverse as possible, legal systems that are not only Western standardized, legal systems that are unique in some way, and look at them and say, okay, we do know that there are some international principles of law and some international treaties. We do know that not all of the countries in the world have embraced those or, you know, have translated those in their national laws or national practices for various reasons. How can we look at those and find the minimum common ground? And this is what this team of you know, people behind this process development is looking at. How can we find this common ground? The guiding principles around that have not been finalized at all. We are in assessment and development phase. I cannot come to you and tell you this is exactly how it's going to be because we're still assessing it, and we are not undermining at all the challenge that this is. But again, it is not part of evaluation. It is a mechanism. If there's a third party that feels that is hurt by that string or that applicant, then they can go and utilize this objection mechanism during a certain period of time, because objection filing starts and ends within a certain period of time, and try to address that issue. Now, in addition to looking at the complexity of the morality and public order concept itself and how to implement, we also look at the fact that when someone applies for a TOD string, the application itself, the string itself, is a sequence of characters. And the sequence of characters can mean different things to different people. Since that has been not implemented yet, and there's no website, there's nothing, there's no registry policy, there's nothing there, it is very hard to identify at this point, yes, indeed, this is a string that is against morality and public order. There are several examples that we use in this debate, and, you know, I'll give you one example that was used, dot Holocaust, for instance, or dot cancer. Well, dot Holocaust by itself is not bad or good. The problem is, what do you do with it? Well, what do you do with it happens on the registrant level. It happens on, you know, levels after the TOD is implemented. So are there any mechanisms, and this is something that, again, we have not defined and we have not concluded on what to do, but we are looking at, okay, is there anything post-delegation that we should be careful about or looking to that is within ICANN mandate, you know, that is very specific to something that would allow third parties hurt by this process to do something about it? Dot cancer, is that a good or bad TOD? Well, we don't know. By itself is a word. You know, it's a sequence of characters. And also, some words mean different things in different languages. You know, this is yet another of the challenges that we have there. So in addition to looking at the objection period in which we trying to create a mechanism that third parties that feel hurt by the process could utilize and object and create awareness. We're also looking at, is there any kind of post-delegation mechanism? Is there anything in the contract, you know, that we could do? Is there any information that we can ask the registrant to better, the future registrar, the applicant, to better understand the intent or the use of this TOD, you know, up front? None of those rules or none of these decisions have yet been finalized. But all of those discussions are on the table.
Did I answer?
Well, I've got a couple of people who are keen to ask questions, and I think perhaps a two-way dialogue on a couple of points would be well worthwhile. I mean, at the moment I've got Evan and then Sebastian. Because you've been using Skype as well, I may have missed someone. Wave, is there anyone else on the speakers list at the moment? If not, thank you, Evan.
Okay, first of all, I just ask that you not be too narrow in the interpretation of the comments that we were making. Our complaint isn't necessarily with the criteria, it's with the whole process. While the objection mechanism, both this and the community objection mechanism, are not exactly part of the criteria, mm-hmm. they certainly do offer a limiting factor to somebody that wants to create a TLD that might be objectionable to somebody else. So although they're not technically part of the criteria, as part of the overall policy, together they constitute an obstacle to doing this kind of thing. So in the objection that we've raised, it's not narrowly interpreting it as just the criteria. It's just when you're to understand the objections that we're having to this, and I can't speak for everybody, but just for myself in this, that it is not simply a matter of, well, it's not in the criteria. Our objection is to the entire policy as a whole, which includes the criteria, and I don't think people here have too many problems with the criteria as they're listed, but the objection mechanism offers a very significant obstacle. In the consultation period, I guess either my Rallo missed it, but we did not see any consultation. Okay, I'm just talking, and Darlene is here with me. From our Rallo, we certainly saw no call.
Okay.
Can I suggest that it was raised meeting after meeting after meeting in the ALAC, and if it did not percolate back down to your RALO, I suggest your RALO considers that outside of this forum.
Okay, then we'll deal with that accordingly. But just be aware that not everyone within at large was given the opportunity to respond for whatever reason. I think part of the problem is simply the idea that ICANN has any business at all being involved in asking the question, what would you do with it? The very notion that ICANN, being a technical body that is trying to administer the namespace, should be involved in issues regarding content, I think is fundamental to the objection. Not a matter of how you resolve it. Does ICANN do it itself? Does it outsource it to an external arbitration body or something like that? The very fact that ICANN is now getting into a realm of debating whether something is morally acceptable, I think, at least from what I can understand, is the fundamental problem here. Not how you lay the mines, but just having the minefield in the first place, I think, is the real problem.
Okay. So I just want to make one comment, because you said it is not in ICANN's business to ask what is the intent of the TOD use. And not for morality and public order, because this is not the intent, but the question that we might ask, and I'm not saying that we will, but we might ask, is because when we look at the type of applications that we receive, there is the likelihood of receiving open and community-based applications, and the notion of community-based application is in recommendations, is in the recommendations. Because of that, if an applicant comes forward and says, I am proposing that TOD, and that TOD is a community-based TOD because we, you know, going to serve or we're going to address the needs of that community in such and such manner, this is what we will ask. Are you community-based? And if so, you know, how? You know, so establish the minimum nexus between the string and the community that is being served. So this is a bit different from what I heard, which is asking the intent of the TOD because we want to monitor or censor or do something with the TOD as it's used. This is not the intent. The intent is really asking what, because there's this element of community-based TODs.
Okay. I'm just going back. Let's go back, in fact, to your earlier example of, say, .holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
We had other examples we used in ours, but I'll stick with yours. The idea that how is somebody going to use this? Are they going to use it either as a memorial, or are they going to use it to promote a Nazi agenda or whatever? And I imagine this is the kind of concern that's raised. And I think what was discussed here was that the danger of having .Nazi or .Holocaust in that context is outweighed by the danger of policing other kinds of things based on the content they might have.
Yeah, I agree. So if somebody applies for .Holocaust, they could apply saying, I'm applying for that as an open TOD, or they could say, I'm applying that as a community base because you know, I'm going to, I don't know, collect all the factual and research and historical data around that event in the world, and you're going to find information, all the kinds of information that you need about this specific event, and it's going to be a research tour around the world where you're going to consolidate historical facts, etc. It's a bit different than it's community-based. If somebody claims community-based, then we might ask, I'm not saying we will, but we might ask, why is it community-based? And so remember, in the whole process, the community-based concept or idea is part of the Geneso principles. And I do realize how challenging it is, the whole concept of community-based, but it is part of it.
I have Sebastian. Are you still? Yes, okay.
Yeah, it's strange to have this discussion today. I just read the French newspaper this morning with an interview of Paul Toomey saying that each one of us will be able to have his own extension. It was what journalists understood, I guess. It was not what Paul Toomey to say, I'm sure. But it's just funny because it's not anymore community-based, and it's not anymore to be done by a group or by an organization. Then it's completely the reverse of what we were talking about here. But I just got a lot of journalists asking me questions about that, and it's a little bit disturbing to be here discussing something and that the radio and the newspaper in Paris are saying the reverse. But at the end, for example, the one of the newspapers this morning, the two examples was dot love and dot, I don't know how to translate in English, I don't know this word, it's N, it's hell, no, dot N, H-A-E-N-I-E-N-E, N, la N, 8.8. And it seems to be that it could fall into the discussion we have about this type of things. And it's just strange that it's those two examples was on the first page of the first business newspaper this morning.
Okay. I'm sure that several people would be fascinated to have a look at the newspaper, but I don't suppose we'd be able to understand it, Sebastian. I wonder if Mr. Toomey may have been misinterpreted. It would be fascinating to see if that's the case. Annetta, you're next.
Just to tell you that I was out of this meeting, sorry, I was answering to journalists and I tried to turn this, but it's not very easy.
Well, I really want to reaffirm what Evan has said before. Our problem is rather the whole concept and to weigh the risks we are facing. And actually, I don't have much problem with the word dot Holocaust, because this is really rather neutral, because it's just, you know, the meaning. I mean, kill Jews, that would be a problem or something. I mean, this is...
That was a very interesting example, because when we were doing the research and looking into, you know, potential issues, I said, okay, somebody could register .Jews or .Catholic or, you know, some of those generic names that by themselves don't mean anything. However, on the second level, someone could do Q.Jews. Yeah. You know, so there's a lot of issues and a lot of things around morality public order that happened on the registrant level, not necessarily on the registry in the new GTOD process. And once we started evaluating these different possibilities, and that was very funny because that was exactly the example that was used, and we had other examples in which people could really use on the second and third level registrations, create sentences and create horrible things. But then where do we draw the line?
But that is exactly easy, because that is already the state of the art. I mean, of course, you know, if you have .de and you as a country code or .org, you could tried to register terrible words before as a second level domain, you know, and that is under the regulation of the country, and that's it. So that is easy. So maybe it's not easy. Maybe it's still difficult, but it's not our business. That it's not our business. So we have no need to talk about this at all. So I rather think we should now really be careful about, and I raised my hand when you said we have this concept of open or community-based. And I'm actually really worried about this because we're talking about the morality issue, we are talking about public order, but we are also talking about privatizing the whole namespace. We're talking about language now. In the past, it was easy because it was just three letters, C-O-M, and I don't know what it meant. Actually, you know, I'm a non-native speaker, so I never thought of commerce. I thought of communication. I thought of, I don't know. So it's, you know, people make something out of that. But now we have words, and I'm really afraid of the privatization of general meanings. And it might be a name of a company somewhere. It might be just the meaning of love somewhere else. And how do you get out of that whole trouble? And this is why I think we should also look closely at the concept of open or community-based, in the past, restricted top-level domains. Maybe it's not the best way, but for me, for the moment, to get rid of all those problems of morality, I some years ago I made the example with .god. I don't have a problem to introduce .god if anyone, even atheists, can register under .god. You know, then you're not falling in the trap of, you know, someone owns it and they use it for their purpose. It's the whole world can use it for their purpose. Fine, that it's what it's for. So how does it go along with this open or community-based thing?
Nick's asked to respond. Go ahead, Nick.
This will probably sound familiar to Evan and Darlene, I know, but even before this was brought up in North America, I had actually had conversations about it. There is interest, for example, of an indigenous peoples, TLD, so that people who visited that TLD would know that bona fide, by whatever criteria was established, bona fide indigenous peoples, domains and information of interest to them was available there. And this may actually, there's considerable interest in North America about this. There's international interest in something similar. There's a possibility of a .health in which there would be some, there would be some efforts to ensure that certain kinds of information, like selling, you couldn't just have a domain that would be for the selling of totally unlicensed drugs from unlicensed sources and all this kind of thing. So there are, I take your point, Vanessa, but there are also some communities who feel that they would like to use this in a way to ensure that people know when they visit a domain in certain TLDs that they know what they are getting in a way. And I don't know if Bo has any thoughts on the consumer protection angle related to restricted TLDs or sponsored TLDs or not, but
none that would come under morality or public order, but in the sense of, well, I don't know if we want to get into that here, but if you want to talk about that offline, sure.
And Carlton?
The fundamental objection, I think, is you say that it is not part of the evaluation process. And I saw a flow chart that laid out, because that was my reaction. My reaction was to the flow chart from the briefing. And that was the briefing, I think, on the 11th June or something. There was a flow chart. And the flow chart took into consideration what I thought was the entire process. And I'm curious as to how you might then say, if the flowchart is correct and the flowchart messages the thinking of what is supposed to happen in this new process, I'm curious as to how you would then hive off this morality and public order bit. I'm really curious as to how you would do that.
No,
I was trying to find it.
I was going to say, there's so many flowcharts on this, it's kind of a problem. Is it the very detailed one with lots and lots of...
Very
big,
detailed.
Big format. Okay, I think I'll try too. Okay.
Very detailed one. It was a flowchart. It was a very detailed flowchart, and it was very clear that there were questions about morality and public order, and it all went through until it finally said, yes, we have now decided on this string. That's what it said. And let us assume that it's not a part of the flowchart. If you say it's not a part of the evaluation process, then the business of morality and public order is gratuitous. It would be gratuitous for you. There is no business. If you say it's not a part of the evaluation process, then you may not bring it in at all. I don't believe you are standing to do that.
Yeah.
I didn't choose these words, by the way.
Yeah.
Morality and public order. This was not chosen by this community. It came from on high. And when I saw it, I had a visceral response to it because I said, well, hold on a minute. If I can just keep... The other thing that bothers me is that I can keep on saying we have a very narrow technical remit. That is the cover all the time.
Yeah.
We have a very narrow technical remit. If that is the case, why are you venturing into that minefield?
Carlton, I'll put the flowchart up. Just guide me to where the part is and I'll zoom in, okay?
That my problem really is twofold. One, if you say that it is not a part of the evaluation process, remove it. If you put it as a part of the evaluation process, you undermine your own raison d'etre because you claim that you have a narrow technical remit. You eloquently outline the technical and the business reasons for the string. Leave it there. You would have done good human work to forward your technical remit.
May I explain about this flow chart?
Yes. We'd be delighted.
Because there's a challenge in designing a flow chart. And because you have to take into account, well, do we show from a phase perspective? Do we show from a historical sequential perspective? What can we do or can we not do? And we have a very complex process design right now. And so we thought, okay, we could probably design a process chart that would somehow demonstrate to the community the thought and the different paths that an applicant could take. And this flow chart that you see up there is a reflection of the different paths that an applicant could take from the moment an application is lodged to the moment there is a TOD delegation process. Now, I do agree with you that sometimes it is hard to look at this process because you have to go through each line, yes, no, and then understand what path you take. Because not all applications go through all of the steps and all of the paths. And some applications could take two paths at the same time. So I do agree with you that the flow chart is, it could be hard to navigate. I don't think it's inaccurate from a path standpoint. Again, look at, okay, how can you, what are the different ways that you can convey a process? And what you, what I hear you saying to me is that this is, this flow chart is confusing. This flow chart really tells.
I'm not saying it's confusing at all. I am reading the words carefully there. You say that objections can be raised on four principal criteria.
That's right.
You said that. That is your words, not mine.
Yeah.
And you outline them there boldly. You also say
yeah.
that on that basis, one or other of those criteria could be used to stymie an application. That's what you're saying. That's what you're saying. That's what you're saying there. I am saying those two, morality and public court and community objection. I have problems with community objection, but I really, really, really detest the idea of you putting morality and public order as a criterion. It is wrong to do that. If you do that, you are going outside of the boundaries you set for yourself. When we did the XXX, and there was a big carrying on about it, the retreat was, well, ICANN is just a business and technical thing. But then you invite other considerations here. You're doing this knowingly. You're doing this aforethought. Let me not say with malice. But you're doing this knowingly. You should not do that. If you do that, you are creating a bad, it's bad policy. Quite frankly, it would be bad policy. Yes, this is policy. That is policy, and it would be bad policy. And I really think that however you try to explain it, so long as you have that as a criteria there, it undermines any explanation.
Can I get in here? Hi. Hi there.
You should have hired Danielle.
Hello, everyone. I'm, for those who don't know me, I'm Denise Michelle, the Vice President of Policy. I think it's important, context is always important here, and I think it's important to define you. When you say you should not include this policy or guideline. The you in this case is the GNSO Council. The you in this case are the business, non-commercial, intellectual property, ISP, registrar, registry, stakeholders, and at large in the ICANN community. For over 2.5 years now, this broad-based community has been working to develop this broad set of guidelines to introduce new GTLDs. At large has been involved actually even before the very beginning. Before the GNSO Council launched a policy development process to guide the introduction of new GTLDs, it was the at-large community, actually, Brett Fossett, was the lead on new GTLDs, yes, demanding that user choice be recognized and respected, and that a sustained process for the introduction of new GTLDs be passed and promulgated by ICANN. And the whole comprehensive report on new GTLD policies was a rough consensus of a lot of competing interests around the GNSO Council and among the ICANN community, including at large. When the GNSO development process started, as I mentioned, it was at a strong urging from at large to provide consumer choice and the ability to for cultures and geographies to be self-defined in the domain space. All of that, right, was a very strong impetus. But the business interests and the intellectual property interests at the table demanded that only restricted, sponsored TLDs be introduced as part of this domain space. And on and on. I mean, there were no one at the table, including at large, of course, but no one at this broad ICANN table agrees with every element of the report. But it is a consensus and an agreement among all of the interested parties. And so so we're at the point now where the board will be taking an up or down vote on whether there should be a policy for the introduction of new GTLDs. It's not so it's not a buffet where they can choose various elements, but of course it is a rough consensus on a strategy for the introduction. The real work will be with Carla and all the various ICANN interests to develop the very detailed implementation of this policy. And what would be, I think, really critical is to get at-large's help and guidance on how we take this well-intentioned policy of keeping in mind the various international treaties on human rights and civil rights and other broad international guidelines in this area that apply to morality and public order, how we take these broadly recognized international ideals and implement it in a way that is effective, that respects freedom of expression and individual rights, and is and works within the constraints of the ICANN system. That is where the focus and the discussion is. I know in other constituencies they're looking at how they can now become engaged with all the other constituencies and craft an implementation plan that really works for them. And it would be very, very critical to make sure that at-large is involved in that.
Okay, on the speaking list, I have in the following order, and if you want to reshuffle yourselves, I suggest you wave frantically at me and let me know. Annetta, Darlene, Alan, Beau, Evan, and I have a speaker who has actually run out of time, so let's make sure we make value out of the time we have. Let's not take too long on each point.
Well, this is a little bit more difficult now because our focus of this discussion was exactly what we would like to give as input, as ALEC, to the board, and that is that we don't like this. We don't want to apply all sorts of treaties of I don't know what, but want to stick to the one Article 19 and rather want to step out of this whole discussion and find a way to get out of this trouble. And so I still have my question open concerning these open and community-based thing. How would you apply those? And back to what Nick has said, I just don't believe in that concept of having .health and only good people will sign up there. It won't work. It did not work with .org. It's only having organization. .pro is a disaster. It's just the concept of having this on a top-level domain doesn't work. If you want to have, like, clear information where really people are in control of something, you can do it on a second level perfectly well. So you have your organization, for example, that health thing I know from the UN. You could do it under UN.org and something, and then you just put your health information there, and then people really know who they are dealing with. But on the top level, I would keep out of that and just give it free to everyone to register and get rid of all these control stuff.
Darlene?
And going back to Nick and Carla's points there, if we do have to do communities of interest, then I'm fine with that. .health, as all healthcare professionals, they have certain criteria. First Nations, help, criteria. But if someone then wants to do .kill Jews, they have the exact same rights. If they want to have nothing but hate mongering on there and white supremacy, then that is their criteria. Really easy for my parental blocker to catch that whole domain and block it, because we don't need that morality and public order stuff up there. People should be able to have what they want, because if we say, oh, no, you can't have that, then it's censorship, and pretty soon someone's going to be censoring something that you care about.
I hear thin edge of the wedge is the fear here, and I can assure you if something is sufficiently objectionable to anybody, someone will find an arbitration level, even at an international court, to make enough of an outcome of it. Alan, then Beau, then Evan.
Denise has covered most of what I was going to say. I was strongly objecting to Carlton's use of you looking at a particular person when, in fact, the only person at this table you could look at with any viability saying you is me, because I was the only one who was sitting on GNSO Council for part of this discussion.
I'm sorry. Let me just... When I say you, I meant I can. I didn't mean the person. I didn't mean the person. I mean the ICANN organization, yeah. Which is the corporate ICANN organization. let me just make that very clear. My apologies to Denise and to if you thought I was speaking, if you thought it was in the present tense. No.
Okay. I would really like a little bit of discussion in the 5 minutes we have left of what the people around this table, what the ALAC and the Railos want to be done at this point. As Denise pointed out, at this point, according to the bylaws, it is an all or nothing. It's unfortunate that this discussion wasn't held when there was more opportunity to refine it. I find it slightly hard to believe that after all the work's been done, the board is going to end up rejecting this whole consensus-based solution. Now, let me finish. Okay. If we think that might happen and that is a good thing for us to completely scrap new GTLDs or send it back to the GNSO, that's certainly something the board can choose to do. I personally wouldn't put a lot of my money on that happening at this point. It could. In that environment, what do we want to happen? We can say the only viable answer is the board must reject this policy and go back to square one, or the alternative, is, as Denise mentioned, is that we recognize that this might happen, and if it does happen, how do we mitigate the impact and the bad results of it? I only see those two possible solutions according to our bylaws right now. And I think we need to address exactly what are we saying to the board. Are we saying, for these reasons, you must reject it and start over at square one or scrap the idea altogether? And I'm just asking, what are we really asking?
Yeah, okay. This is actually the conversation that goes on when I let Carla leave. I'd really like to hear from Bo and then Evan. Evan, I know you're waving at me, but it was the order. Bo and then Evan, okay?
Mine's very quick. I just wondered if there was any way to ask, community objection versus morality and public order. I mean, is there a way that if morality and public order is so objectionable sitting there in that box that in the implementation process it could come under community objection? Because it seems to me that the two would be kind of the same. So if somebody wanted to create a dot Hitler or something, the community of perhaps the Jewish people might object to it in that area and handle it that way, as opposed to via morality and public order. Is that a suggestion that we could make that would help? Or does that just not make sense to anyone?
No, it makes sense. I understand what you're saying. There is the challenge of defining community, but I understand what you're saying.
It sounds to me like this is, again, something that will feed very much into our choices of where we're going. Evan, and then Izumi.
First, one comment about something you said, Denise, in saying, and both of you have been made reference to how well At Large was consulted. And my gut tells me that if we were consulted so well and if the good comments came back so well, why are we here right now? Obviously, there is some massive breakdown in the communications process that would have given the impression that At Large was okay with what was being done, only to have us turn around at this meeting and come out with the resolution you see in front of you. So that tells me that either At Large was not sufficiently consulted or that there's some other kind of breakdown going on here, or else there wouldn't be such a misconception that you think ALAC was sufficiently consulted and you knew what our views are, and yet here you are surprised by what we're saying now. In terms of other things about the consistency of what happens in the content, you have circumstances such as even the new city TLDs, where you have application for .Berlin, .Paris, .NYC. These three domains could have extremely different characters to them, and yet might be thought as by the public as being the same thing. So does ICANN have a role in enforcing that all city TLDs must have the same kind of structure, be owned by the same kind of community group? Or does the downside of policing that simply outweigh the benefits that are to be gained by policing content? I just don't see it. And as far as the complexity of the flowchart, I think what we're asking is to simplify the flowchart and help you make your life easier. Simplify the flowchart and simply take a good chunk of this out of it.
No, I just have one quick thing about the consultation. What happened was there were a lot of emails sent out to on the list to everyone, but there was nothing that said, hey, this is the point that you need to look at. It was more along the lines of the new GTLD process going on. Here's the latest document. Can you please read it? Can you please comment? And that didn't come back because that's part of the issue that we have, that we need to get somebody to sit down and go through all these documents and make the briefing and say, hey, this is, you know, and bring it down to a digestible thing. Because I do remember hearing some people in the Caribbean looking at it and saying, I can't read this document. It's too big. And that's part of the reason that we had issues with that thing. But it was out there. But it wasn't out there in terms of, hey, this is an important part that you may have an issue with, so you really should read page 16 of the summary because that's where you might have a problem. We didn't have that kind of, that sort of activity didn't happen.
So thank you for agreeing with me that there was a massive breakdown in communications.
I would not go so far as to say that at all, Evan. I think it's something that clearly we need to do better. But, you know, quite literally, that we need to be aware, and I do have a Zoomie, that something called the workshop on the ALAC review started 60 seconds ago. I don't know how you all feel, but I think that ALAC should possibly be there. The Zoomie, would you care to make a final comment? And we will reconvene at a point probably immediately after the ALAC review workshop.
I just want to add comment to what Alan said, that we, with all the valid points, concerns, but pragmatically, what can we do? Is it possible to send our message, ask some kind of resolution additional by the board or to be considered, to be very careful in implementing these, limiting the possibility of the damage or with our concerns in a pragmatic manner as a sort of friendly amendment?
Okay.
I'm sorry. To my mind, what was resolved was that there were very specific parts of this thing, that process that we believe undermined the public good. And as far as I was concerned, it was ICANN's responsibility to respond to that which we see and examine it. And if you agree with us, then the board at that point has the right to say, well, you know, in principle, we accept the new GTLD process without this bit. That can happen. The board can say, well, we can, and we're back to working. Now, how you implement that, it could be at the implementation stage. You rework that bit. It could be that that's how we do it. It could be that they say, oh, okay, it is egregious. So GNSO, because of the egregious effect on the public good, then we would respectfully wish for you to look at this again. The board could decide that too. That's what the resolution decides. But the resolution is clearly stating to the board that we feel that there's an issue that affects the public good, and we feel you have a duty of care to look at it and then find ways to mitigate it. That's what it says.
The absolute last word goes to Alan.
Thank you. I just want to reiterate, or maybe reiterate because I'm not sure I said it before, the only option the board has is to send it back to council. you'd be fooling yourself if you think GNSO Council added that clause, that recommendation, after 5 minutes discussion. It was added and changed several times with a lot of input from a lot of people on a lot of different sides, and ended up as being the best they thought they could do, accepting the fact that NCUC, or at least some NCUC members and other people, voted no against the whole policy because of it. But nevertheless, it was what the council at that time felt was the best they could come up with. And there, by the way, there were a lot worse ones in between that you would have liked even less. So it's not intuitively obvious that sending it back to council is going to fix it to everyone's satisfaction. I'm just stating that as what I think is a reality, not something I'm happy about.
Let's continue this conversation in reconvening. If there is no reason, can staff find out if we can have this room after the ALAC review meeting? If we can, I suggest reconvene here after that. Thank you. If not, it'll have to happen.
The room is available.
Back here, reconvene after ALAC review. Let's go look like we care.